Okay, the board has returned from executive session. It's 11:45. We will do a roll call to ensure everybody's present. Dr. Bastia.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Here.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
And I am Judy Chepius, and we are also joined by Assistant Attorney General Mark Harris. Okay. Dr. Bastia.
Okay, so after executive session, we're still working on the issue of physical therapist assistance and patient abandonment. Is there any further discussion?
I believe, just to kind of clarify the question, the board does receive questions of this nature, and it's never an easy one to answer based on the board statutes and rules and the definitions therein, which identifies in many circumstances, in many places, it identifies as the physical therapist is in charge of the patient care that is provided either by themselves or by the assistive staff. So, the statutes and rules do not specify patient abandonment. They instead would be a form of unprofessional conduct. It could be a form of poor communication or poor documentation in the medical record, not knowing whose patient, you know, who is on schedule to see that patient. Codes of ethics, it could be those kinds of violations. But even for a PT or a PTA, patient abandonment is not a specific piece of information. So it could, of course, influence the case. It could be a part of the case, a part of the findings, a part of the issues that are brought forth. But the question before you is specific to physical therapist assistance, given our current statutes and rules. Is patient abandonment something that could therein be a part? Now, if a PTA does something that is, you know, against the Practice Act or substandard care or whatever, the board can certainly find all of those kind of violations. But specifically to the responsibility of the patient of the PTA, where is that cross?
So if a complaint did come in, the entire case would have to be looked at and then investigated, you know, on its own merits.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Karen, in that I would anticipate, like any other case, we would do a full right investigation and look at the behaviors and all the factors leading up to the reason for the complaint to make decisions based on, you know, patient care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The matter is agendized for possible action, but I do believe that was just specific for to allow the board its latitude, but I don't necessarily think that there needs to be any kind of vote or any kind of determination. It was just a question before the board to understand, you know, how the board feels about that particular one element of PT and PTA interaction and patient responsibility. So, Mr. Harris, if I'm missing anything, feel free to jump in. There was a head shake.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate Dr. Bastia and Dr. King's comments.
Perfect. Okay. Well, the next item then is legislative update. So I will, there's been, it's kind of strange. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. There's been some action and a lot of inaction. So at this point, the two bills that are still navigating the system that were brought forward by the association are House Bill 2583 for physical therapists, imaging, and laboratory tests, and Senate Bill 1346 for physical therapists and disability placards. Both of those are currently in about the same position. They're still navigating. They've made it through the legislative process and are respectively waiting in their current houses, the committee of the whole third reading. We'll just keep watching them to see how they proceed. There is one that was signed by Governor Hobbs recently on March 31st, and that's House Bill 2173, Mental Health Inquiry and Prohibition. And when this is law, it'll impact the application questions related to mental health. So staff anticipates at this point that we will receive further guidance, hopefully. But in the meantime, staff is reviewing the application questions and communicating with other Arizona boards and other state PT boards to determine how they address any of those questions. So the board's application questions are currently stated in rule, but the board's rule packet that is in its final stages, hopefully, cross fingers, it strikes the question language from the rule itself, from the written rules, thereby providing a little bit more flexibility when statutes arise and you know, it allows us to react in a little more clean manner. So we will still be looking at that. I anticipate that we will probably bring it back when we have additional ideas of what to change the question to. But there is definitely a question that will be affected on the board's applications. House Bill 2927 for public meetings record requirements. This one had a slight amendment to it, not necessarily in how it'll affect the board. But this is the bill that's requiring the board, should it pass, to provide not only public access through technological devices if the board meets online, but to also have a physical location. So again, we'll be watching that one.
I was going to ask you about that too, Judy. That would that necessarily mean we would need to go back to live meetings with access?
Not necessarily. No, it's just specific to allowing public the way to attend. And I think we discussed this one last time, Kelly, but one of the issues, and I was questioned about this by OSPB, which is the agency, the governor's, I'm blanking on it. I know it like the back of my hand. But it's basically the budgeting committee that helps the governor come up with the governor's version of the budget and also provides our appropriations as a board. They inquired about that and literally in all the time that I've been in this position, we've not had one request by anybody to, you know, I want to attend in person as opposed to online. You know, typically it's just the opposite. They're relieved. Oh, okay. I can just dial in. So, it's yet to be determined how that will impact. So the next one is Senate Bill 1235. So this is the one with health profession regulatory boards and membership. If you remember, this one is the one. So this one has kind of gone full circle. There's been some amendments to it. The latest amendment was in the House Commerce Committee. And in essence, what the amendment did is it struck the original language. Well, the original language was already stricken in terms of alternating to four public members and two PTs. It was brought back to be two public members, two PTs in current practice, two PTs who maybe are not involved in practice in the marketplace, being retired or education. And this latest amendment struck that and basically brought us right back to where we are statutorily in terms of the makeup of our board members. So, it still retains the other components of developing a committee to, a council, I should say, to review and approve or deny market sensitive actions taken by health profession regulatory boards. So, and also a comprehensive report from each board to facilitate the revision and consolidation of statutes governing each health profession regulatory board. So those pieces are still in it. If it's passed by the House, the amended version will have to return to the Senate to where the Senate can either accept the current amendment or not. So we still don't know how this one's going to look in the end, or if it continues on. Another bill that has been brought before you is Senate Bill 1237 for state employees, remote work, and the prohibition. This bill was a strike everything and, in essence, prevents any state employee, any full-time state employee from working remotely. And this one is kind of interesting because it was on the committee of the whole in the House on the calendar, and there was an actual motion to, and I quote, retain on the calendar. So it's still on the House committee of the whole's calendar, but it hasn't been acted on. So I don't know what that means yet. But again, we're just watching it.
Okay.
Two bills, the first time I'm throwing them. I don't think that either of these will have any kind of real impact, but Senate Bill 1372 is for public records notification of commercial purposes. So in essence, the bill is requiring that if public records are requested to identify that they're not for commercial purposes, or if they are for commercial purposes, to explain that use. The board's public records request documents already request that information. So I don't really think that this one will be much change, if any at all. So but it is something that's continuing through and probably getting towards the end of the process. Senate Bill 1527 is for occupational boards and renewal extensions. This is another one where I think the board would already do this, not that we've really had to per se, but in cases where a renewal period can't be addressed, can't be finalized, the board would put an action into place to basically extend the existing expiration date until such time as they could be renewed properly. It prohibits the board from asking for payment during that time frame, which I understand, and I don't think we would do anyways, you know, if that came about. I think we would address it much the way that the bill intends. The massage therapy continuation, that one is a little bit concerning. It's stalled, and there's not a lot to discuss about that one other than the fact that I don't really know what's going to happen if this doesn't continue on, or if something doesn't continue on in terms of the massage board continuation. But I anticipate that there is some other pathway to manage this if this bill doesn't go through. I just don't know what that is yet. So I am happy to try to answer any questions about any of these or any others that you've found. Anything? Okay. Well, the next one is more about the alternate approval pathway and ADA accommodations. And based on that, it's also going to pull in the jam to this discussion. So on April 16th, board staff was notified that FSBPT Board of Directors voted to offer to quote unquote new AAP states the option for FSBPT to process the ADA accommodation requests on the board's behalf. When the board adopted the AAP, the services provided by the FSBPT didn't include the processing of ADA accommodation requests. Rather, the requests were required to continue being processed by the jurisdiction. This is a departure from the way the FSBPT previously administered AAP, and Arizona was the first jurisdiction that the Federation did not process ADA. So if the board wishes to take advantage of this opportunity, it will require an updated addendum to its FSBPT contract. And so the board is asked whether to direct staff to pursue the necessary contract changes, and updated addendum to the alternate approval pathway. Additionally, because if we're looking to update addendums to FSBPT, it might be timely to also consider the idea of moving towards a JAM instead of the secure testing facilities for the jurisprudence exams. So at this point, in essence, what either or both of these would require is working with FSBPT to take advantage of and make the changes to the addendums, as well as the state procurement office who manages state contracts. And if you remember correctly, the state contract with FSBPT was a little bit time consuming. So if we're open, if we're discussing opening it up again, I would like to request that the board consider making both changes if possible.
Do you need a motion for that?
I'm pretty sure we will need a motion for that.
Do you need two, or will one suffice?
I think probably one suffices, right, to direct staff to seek those addendum changes.
Yeah.
Okay. So would somebody like to make a motion?
Are there any questions by any of the board members about the JAM, or I just want to make sure, because that language is familiar to us, but it might not be to our public members.
Mm-hmm. It is not.
Yeah.
So it's simply an acronym. So the FSBPT has long provided the administration of jurisprudence exams for various states who want to take advantage of that, Arizona being one of them. There is a LAW version of jurisprudence that is, which Arizona currently has, where the test is administered at a secure testing facility. So people have to register and pay for it, be granted eligibility to test, schedule their test date, go to that facility. Sometimes it's hundreds of miles away, the nearest one. A JAM is called a jurisprudence assessment module. It's just kind of terminology difference for the Federation to keep track of those. It's slightly different. So you've got the secure testing facility of the law exam, which Arizona currently has, versus an online on-demand version of a jurisprudence exam, which it is slightly different in so much as it takes a different structure to help the licensees who are taking the exam really understand, rather than just memorizing the rules. And if there are wrong answers or whatever after the fact, the individual can see where the citations are and what the applicable statutes and rules are. So it takes a different pathway to the learning, but more than anything else, it's available online. We do require the jurisprudence exam of all applicants, of anybody who the board disciplines and requires that jurisprudence exam, compact privilege holders who are testing at initial and renewal, and that ease of access should the board choose to in the future seek jurisprudence requirements associated with renewal. It would make it something that, you know, currently would be prohibitive. You just can't process that many requests and that many test dates and everybody getting in there in a 2-month period. It just wouldn't be feasible. An online version might eliminate some of those hurdles, but that would be an absolute future discussion for the board to have. But basically it makes it more convenient for the individual coming into Arizona to practice to access that exam, that required exam.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I make a motion that we, I'm not sure how to write it, but direct that we request an addendum to our contract with FSBPT to include consideration for the ADA requests, or whatever it's called, alternate pathway, I think maybe, or ADA requests, and consider the JAM, the jurisprudence exam process that, that the FSBPT offers.
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded to direct staff to pursue addendums to its FSBPT agreements to allow FSBPT processing of ADA accommodation requests and online jurisprudence examination modules.
Yes. Well said.
I got you. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
That motion passes. Perfect. We will work on it. I can't promise it'll be tomorrow that it happens, but.
It can't come soon enough.
All right. Mr.
Harris. Exciting.
Mr. Harris will feel our pain. Yes. That was a very exciting, email to receive. The next thing, the compact, at its June special meeting, the PT Compact Commission adopted a bylaw requiring the completion of an online form annually to identify at least one contingent delegate to the PT Compact who will serve if the original appointed delegate is unable to serve. The PT Compact emailed member boards on April 10th. Requesting that the board address this issue and complete the online form within 2 weeks after its next meeting. Mr. Greer is currently the board's appointed delegate to the PT Compact Commission. In January, the board elected Mr. Greer as its FSBPT delegate as well, and Dr. King was elected as the alternate delegate, and that information is just provided for your information moving forward. The matter before the board is to identify a contingent delegate to the PT Compact Commission. And once identified, staff will require will complete the required online forms.
I move that we appoint Dr. King as our delegate, if she's willing.
Oh, sure.
Second.
We've got two chances to be the alternate there, Dr. King.
There we go.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to appoint Dr. King as contingent delegate to the PT Compact Commission. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes. And moving right along, this one is just a little quickie. I thought it might be important to update you all that our CENTIA cloud migration is considered done.
Yay.
Finally. Nice. Board staff signed off on the migration project and has paid the annual fees covering the February 2025 through February 2026 charges. As noted in the sign-off that was attached for your review, there are two exceptions with work still in progress, including corrections of the automatically calculated business entity expiration date and an API integration with FSBPT. So, It was well known throughout the project that API would be an ongoing process. FSBPT was working with the Nevada board first. They have since launched theirs, and ours is in the point where it's being tested right now. In essence, what that will do is it will provide an automated process for something that is completely manual at this point. So currently staff collects the FSBPT ID number of any applicants and also their test scores and manually enters them in their application data, and then provides documentation of licensure and licensure status on a weekly basis to FSBPT to comply with our membership agreements. This would basically take the pain out of that. It would move it from a manual process to an automated process, thereby offering accuracy and swiftness to it. So that's still in process. And FSBPT is planning to work with all Sentia states to just kind of integrate this process. The business entity expiration dates, that's gone back and forth, and I'll save you all the painful details, but in essence, it's just a case of ensuring that when a business entity registration is renewed, that it gets it for the full 2-year cycle rather than a 1-year cycle or with incorrect dates. So that was glitchy and we're still working to get that finished. Once that's corrected, then we move on to testing those business entity renewals, which are coming up faster than Monica would like to think. But they'll be here before we know it. So we want to get that tested, finished and tested. But that's a 2-year process that's done. Any questions about that? Any concerns, thoughts? Okay. Next is the financials. I did provide to you this time. I don't know if you would like to continue receiving it or not. So typically, I look back in the board history, and the board typically gets a summary, a PDF of the summary page. And I did include that summary page is only one component of an overall enormous spreadsheet. And we work with that spreadsheet. We, balance everything every month. But I didn't know if the board had interest in continuing to see the whole spreadsheet, or if the summary suffices, or what you would like. But I'm happy to do it either way or both ways.
I thought the summary was really great. I did have a stupid question. There's on the tab, the summary report tab, line item 46, column O, the number has a red box around it. Do we need, mm-hmm. is that drawing our attention to something specific, or is that just how it's set up?
So as it goes through, so we're a board that gets an appropriation. So they drop those appropriations quarterly into mm-hmm. So we are granted the total appropriation, and then quarterly it's broken down into quarter increments, right? So what they do, and you'll notice some of those numbers are blue, and so they just kind of spread what they anticipate are the budgeted amounts. So we're what's called a lump sum agency, so we get a budget of a lump sum that they identify the way that they think it's going to be spent in terms of like salaries and EREs. But they never really align with truly what actually goes out. But that red number there is what we look to have in excess.
Okay.
Based on their projections. Now, what they're not projecting in here is we're currently engaged in a scanning project to scan all of the board's old records files, mm-hmm. which will be billed the latter part of this fiscal year. And that's not figured in there at all. They just figure kind of basics. So that number will fluctuate, and it'll go up and down, and I'll get, notices going, hey, are you budgeting properly? You've got all this money here or whatever. So that's what it is. It's just kind of drawing attention to the fact that based on their calculations of what they know to be upcoming, because this is developed by a different agency. This is an agency external to us. They're the ones who actually complete our payments when we approve them. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wow, the first budget question.
That was Michael Clinton worthy.
I know. Thank you. I'm channeling Michael.
Yeah.
So then next up is the licenses and certificates that were issued. The licenses and certificates, of course, April is a testing month, so March is kind of, in the belly of that roller coaster. But we anticipate that after the April tests, we will see a huge pump up in May. Again, we're still clearing out, based on the AAP, we're clearing out those old applications. Our average processing days for this month for these approvals was 73.03 days. That's not out of the ordinary. It's not unexpected.
Yes.
Even though there are some endorsements in here. And, you know, I was looking at that a little bit and for example, one of the ones that took the longest that upped that number, it was just a case of you're not providing the rest of the deficient items. So please provide, please provide, please provide. And finally it occurred. So, you know.
So Judy, did you say it's an average of 73 days
for a license approval?
From application to actually receiving the license?
Mm-hmm.
So is that, do we communicate that to the schools who have new grads and whatnot, just so that they?
Not necessarily. And, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you why, because so the biggest part of it and what we're going to see differently with AAP is the fact that with an examination and for schools, yes, we inform them that they need to apply in advance of those, not only the test date, but the jurisdictional approval date, which is a month before the test date. So previously they had to have their application completed, including all their third party documents, with the exception of finalized test scores and transcripts before they were approved to
right.
test. Then you wait for those test dates. So that means in essence, you probably have every application for examination submitted 2 to 3 months before the exam. And then it sits there until the scores come in, assuming they pass. So with AAP, it's going to be a little bit different. So Kelly, to answer your question, that 73.03, that's a combined of examinations and endorsements. What we're really seeing now in reality, we're approving applications. Some of the endorsements that are coming to us, if they're fully complete, we're doing it in a couple of days, couple of weeks. Examinations now with AAP, they'll be able to take their exams before they submit an application. So again, we'll get an application that is complete instead of getting it, housing it, and then waiting for the rest of the documentation.
Okay. Thank you.
That was going to be my question, because it seems like when we get new grads coming into my company, they get approved pretty quickly. So I was wondering if they were really within that 73 days or if that was somebody else, another category of people. So you answered my question with all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it makes sense if they're supposed to send their application in 2 to 3 months. Well, there are 60 days right there. Their training of that we wouldn't ever see them because they're still in school.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And then if you have especially the students, if they don't pass the exam on their first try, you're housing it for another 3 months until the next exam, assuming they're taking the next exam. One of the things that I do want to do, and I kind of paused it simply because I got this email about the ADA piece with the FSBPT, but one of the things that I want to do is I want to get all of the program directors in on a meeting and say, okay, now this is how we're processing now. This is what you need to do and all that. So now I need to make sure we get the whole ADA piece, because that was different too. I need to make sure we get that all compiled, and then I'll do that when we know the correct path for everybody. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Any other questions? Any future agenda items?
I was going to bring up the Con Ed situation as far as when you guys are requesting Con Ed certificates for audit. Would it make more sense just when everybody does their relicensure to just have them automatically upload everything into the portal so that you guys don't have to start contacting anyone? You can just do an automatic audit that way, and potentially we don't run into a situation like the person we had on today and some of the past ones.
So the board in 2020, well, I guess, can I go down this path, Mr. Harris, or do I need to put it on a different agenda?
Is it okay if we, Giovanni, if you want to have a more in-depth conversation, can we put it on the agenda for May?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure putting it on the agenda was worth it. So,
well, and maybe you and Judy can talk, you know, between now and setting the agenda to see if it's something that should go on the agenda or your questions were answered.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, yep, I will put it on.
Thank you.
So what I put down is continuing competence required at time of renewal. Continuing competence documentation required at time of renewal. And that will be a robust discussion. Spoiler. Anything else for future agenda items? I was thinking of one as we moved into the board business and I saw the yawns and stretching. We might take a note out of the FSBPT and make everybody stand up and do jumping jacks or something.
Oh, there we go.
Some sort of choreographed dance.
Yeah.
Right. So the only thing left is the motion to adjourn.
Yippee-ki-yay.
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes. This meeting is adjourned at 12:21 and the recording will stop at that same time. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great day.